We'll turn now to Northern Ireland. After decades of sectarian violence and protracted negotiations, prospects for a permanent peace in Northern Ireland seem to be higher than usual. The prime ministers of Britain and Ireland thought they'd arrived at a peace plan agreeable to the two key parties in the conflict, Sinn Féin, the political arm of the outlawed IRA, and the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party, headed by Protestant leader Reverend Ian Paisley. But the two sides hit a roadblock on Wednesday. They cannot agree on verifiable means to document the destruction of the IRA's weapons caches. And joining us now from Belfast is Mark Davenport, Northern Ireland political editor for the BBC. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Hello there.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair and Irish Prime Minister Bertie Ahern had hoped to unveil this plan to restore the power-sharing government there in Belfast. It did not happen the way they'd hoped. Tell us what's where it stands now.
No, that's true, Neil. It was really a question of so near and yet so far. They have had some very hard negotiations over the last few months between these parties, which really represent the polar extremes of Northern Ireland politics, with Ian Paisley on the Protestant side and Gerry Adams on the Catholic Irish nationalist side. And they had achieved, by any standard, some really remarkable compromises, which they were going to unveil, that would come together in a kind of a jigsaw and allow a local government, which has been suspended out of action here for some time, to be put back on track. These kind of compromises involved Ian Paisley's Democratic Unionists, who so far refused to share power with Gerry Adams' party because of their links to the IRA committing to share power. It would have involved the IRA effectively going out of business and announcing an end to all their violent activities and the destruction of all their weapons by the end of this year. And also Gerry Adams' party would have reconsidered its attitude to the police here. During the course of the 30 years of the Troubles, police officers were considered by the IRA legitimate targets, people who they would kill as upholders of British rule, which they regarded as illegitimate in this part of Ireland. Now, they haven't been doing that, obviously, for the past few years because the IRA is on ceasefire, but neither have they been encouraging young Catholics to join the police. So if they reconsidered that attitude, that would have been very significant on the streets here.
We're speaking with Mark Davenport, Northern Ireland political editor for the BBC, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now, as I understand it, the IRA in these negotiations was willing to destroy its weapons caches and to have members of the clergy from both sides there to witness this, but was not willing to have pictures of this published.
Yeah, this was really the piece of the jigsaw that didn't happen, and all the other pieces were dependent upon it. The IRA has in the past allowed some of its weapons to be destroyed, and that has been verified by a Canadian general, John de Chastelin, who heads a commission which actually does that job. But essentially, there's very little trust between the two sides here in Northern Ireland, and many Protestants and Unionists, because they hadn't seen it with their own eyes and because the details that were released were extremely vague, simply didn't believe it to be true. And that included Ian Paisley's party. They wanted really greater reassurance that this really was going to happen. And a package was being negotiated and put together which would have allowed the general to give far more details than he had given before. It would have allowed these clergymen, one from the Protestant side, one from the Catholic side, to witness it all. But the really difficult, controversial bit was that Ian Paisley said he wanted some photographs taken as well. And he basically wanted to show his voters and to have in the newspapers proof that IRA weapons had been destroyed. And essentially the IRA balked at that. They said it wasn't possible, that he was simply trying to humiliate them. And on that, the whole pack of cards has fallen down.
Humiliate them. This would be seen as, from the IRA's point of view, a symbol of surrender?
Exactly. I mean, in a sense, they were happy enough to destroy their weapons, provided they could do it privately with nobody seeing it. And they pointed to a speech which the Reverend Ian Paisley, who's not only a politician but obviously a fundamentalist Protestant preacher, had made, in which he talked about the IRA having to wear sackcloth and ashes, and they saw that as proof that he wanted to use these pictures A, to humiliate the IRA, and B, to boost his own chances in an election campaign, which is likely to take place in the spring of next year. They decided that that was a step too far, and they're blaming him for really, I suppose, asking for too much. He says he doesn't believe that they ever really were serious in their statement that they would destroy all their weapons all along, and the fact that they haven't produced the photographs he sees as proof of that.
So what happens next?
Well, it's a narrow divide, if you like, because they have agreed surprising progress or surprising potential progress on all these different areas, from getting the government back up and running here, the big steps that would have been taken on policing and so on. But even though it's a narrow gap, it's quite a deep chasm, and they have really fallen out over this point. There's lots of charges being thrown around right now of people lying. Ian Paisley has again called the IRA bloodthirsty monsters. So with all of that kind of rhetoric and the sides digging themselves in, it seems to me that even though all this potential progress has been achieved, it could be a long, long time before the government's put this back on track. Certainly, probably the other side of this parliamentary election, which is due probably in May next year.
And then you get into marching season, and that gets to be difficult as well. How are people in Northern Ireland reacting to this disappointment?
Well, I think there's a fair degree of disappointment. People were, I think, quite taken aback by the level of progress that had been made by the politicians, and this did look like the possibility of a final settlement. We've not got the kind of level of violence that was once the case in Northern Ireland. Things have been getting better, but they've been by no means perfect, and this looked like it was a possibility of really setting this place on the path to a final and stable peace. At the same time, I think, people to some extent live in a parallel world from the politicians, and they'll just get on with it. And as long as it doesn't touch them, well, they'll just say, this is what the politicians do here, they argue. And both sides, whilst there may be some criticism of them from people who tend to be in the middle, both sides, I think, will be able to explain their positions to their own followers, and both of them will probably still do quite well in next year's elections.
Mark Devenport, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it. Mark Devenport is the BBC's Northern Ireland political editor, and he joined us on the phone from Belfast in Northern Ireland. Ira Flato will be here tomorrow to talk about Marie Curie and take your calls. We'll see you on Monday. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.